Hi, this is Jason Shadrick with PremierGuitar.com, and we're on stage here with Walter Becker's guitar tech, Dave Rule, and he's going to walk us through what Walter's using on the Steely Dan Summer Tour. So Dave, thanks a lot for taking the time to show us around.
My pleasure.
So why don't you show us what Walter's playing this summer?
This is Walter's main guitar. It's a Sadowski Walter Becker Signature Series. 3P90s and some tricky little electronics going on in there.
Mm-hmm. Like how so?
The dual positions are hum canceling, which comes in handy because these things can create quite a bit of noise. There's a switchable EQ curve on that switch. And then there's three position preamp. It's just like a buffer boost and then like a severe gain boost. But this guitar will see action most of the night. Mm-hmm. Next favorite one would probably be this one, which is a pretty straight ahead two humbucker. It's got the same basic electronics and without the switch, without the pull switch. Mm-hmm. But it's the same preamp, same tone controls. This one had been retired for a while. We just brought it back out for this tour. Mm-hmm. Hadn't played it in quite some time.
And what strings is he using on these guitars?
Right now I'm using Ernie Ball 11s on all the Sadowskis. Mm-hmm. And Ernie Ball 10s on some of the other guitars. Like
Dave?
That's Dumpster, yes. This is, I think one night he wasn't getting what he wanted out of it. He told me to throw it in a dumpster and then came in the next day and apologized to it. So now it's tag dumpster. This is a Hahn all mahogany telly. Thin one body that this guitar will also see quite a bit of action during the course of the night. It sounds really nice.
Are there certain songs he pulls this one out for, or is it kind of pretty random?
It's kind of random. It's pretty much toward the end of the set, he'll start looking for a little brighter kind of thing and he'll pull this out.
So are the guitar changes worked out ahead of time? No.
No. Okay, we'll no, yeah, that's okay. That's another story altogether. All right. Here's another one that came out of the closet. He got this, I don't know, what do you say, 5 years ago or something, and never really used it. We were, while in rehearsals, we were going through a lot of guitars, pulled this out and discovered quite a nice sounding instrument. A little tricky to get it to play in tune because of a non-compensated bridge, but a little creative plier work.
So is this a vintage telly?
It's a relic.
Relic, okay.
Yeah, relic Nocaster. Mm-hmm. As you can see by the headstock. We've got this another Hahn Stratocaster, which will come out. He's been using this on Godwhacker. It seems to like to play it on that. Once in a while, he'll put it on and just not want to take it off. Mm-hmm. You know, the one night he played almost the entire show between these two Hahn guitars. And this is one he just recently acquired. This Fry guitar, I think they're made up here, aren't they?
They're made in Chicago. They got it from Rock and Roll Vintage.
Yeah, but I looked online. I think the guy's actually from up around here, or from Green Bay or somewhere in Wisconsin. But this is made out of cedar.
No, it's spruce.
It's spruce, right. Very light. Very nice sounding. This will come out probably on Reeling in the Years. The Silver Sadowski that he's really fond of this guitar and will make an appearance at any random moment. Mm-hmm. You know, this was his dressing room guitar. The one he traveled with on the last tour. And I couldn't get out of his hands to set it up because I got my hands on it one day. I was like, this needs a little attention. And I couldn't get it away from him. So,
is there a reason behind the different knob there?
I don't know. That was there when I came aboard, so I'm not quite sure what the story is with that. I think it's easier for him to pull it up.
Oh, right.
Because these are, you know, if you're doing a push-pull on these knobs is a little awkward sometimes. But this has also got the same electronics as the other.
With the three-position?
Yeah, with the three-position preamp right here. And I think that this might have been, like, the prototype idea for this. for this. It's for the signature one. That's basically this without a pickguard.
So this is kind of like his real go-to studio guitar.
He told me that in the studio he'll go through a half a dozen guitars and end up playing this. Because there really is something tonally that happens when there's no external strings. You know, everything's clamped down here and clamped down there, so there's no vibration passing anywhere else, really. And apparently it works for him in the studio. As you can see, I mean, that bridge is locked in there. It's screwed down really tight, and there's a block in there, so it can't. If he breaks a string, it won't drop.
Right.
This one has not seen the light of day yet on this tour, but we're not done yet. This is the Cower Banshee. That's modeled after an anonymously named Gibson guitar, and unlike its grandfather, it doesn't. You notice that it actually holds position. It doesn't do that, thanks to the Steinberger tuners, which make it actually very lightweight. And everything on here is very lightweight. Bridge is got a pigtail bridge on here because it came with a wraparound aluminum bridge that was, it sounded good and it looked great, but it just would not play in tune. And he's very, very particular about the intonation on his instruments. Mm-hmm. You know, and he hears things most people don't.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they made all those great records all those years. So, this he plays every night on Kid Charlemagne in the Encore. And then this Faino is another recent acquisition. Interesting instrument. It's got the tone control is actually stepped. So there's like a different capacitor on each step, and it's like 16 steps in this thing. Yeah, so. But, it's got a nice sound. He's, you know, he'll play it now and again. This isn't going to make a definite appearance in any given night. Mm-hmm. We've got the V. The V is yet to make an appearance on stage.
And what year is this V?
I'm really not sure. It's not as old as it looks.
Okay.
Put it that way. Tell the truth, I'm not even sure it's Gibson.
Okay.
But sounds pretty good. It's got a really big neck. Uh-huh. It's a big baseball bat kind of neck. It did a really good job. I mean, all the detail on it is pretty good. Right down to the rubber leg mat that never really works.
Yeah.
It was a good idea, but you still can't play with this thing in your lap. You know? So we brought it back today. He's been playing this in his hotel a bit. So we'll see if it makes an appearance this evening.
All right, so out of the guitar, where does it hit it first on the pedal board?
First thing it hits on the pedal board is the Sonic Research Tuner, which is actually, it's very visible from a distance and extremely fast and extremely accurate.
I was going to say, you mentioned he's a stickler with intonation. Did he have to go through a lot of different tuners, you think, or has he found this one that he really sticks with?
I think once he found this, he was pretty sold on it. Mm-hmm. You know, because it responds really quickly, and it's very, very accurate. The slightest little bit out, and it's a dramatic visual.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not fiddling around with, is it moving or isn't it? It really isn't any question, especially when you're looking at it from this distance.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then it goes from here into the tone press compressor. Now, at the moment, not everything on here is actually plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
We had everything going at one time and then realized it was probably losing a little bit of signal, so we started taking things out. From the compressor, we go into the Eventide pitch factor. All right, and there's two presets in there that he'll use. Out of that, into the Eventide space, which is a set for a spring reverb setting.
So he basically uses the space just as a reverb unit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then out of that, into this Lely switcher, which, I mean, it's labeled for the three basic amps we'll use, but that could change at any moment. I could come out here and repatch things and at any given time. So that's the last thing. Oh no, actually I forgot, there's that in there just in case. Occasionally you run into a building where there's an excessive amount of noise and RF in the building, and we'll need that. So that's the last thing in the audio chain before the switcher. And then out of the switcher, we go back to Amporama.
All right, so out of the switcher, he goes to his amp rig. So what's the first amp that he uses?
It's a Sur 18 watt. Interesting little amp. It's got a lot of power shaping, and there's more than tone. There's not a lot of tone control, but there's, you can adjust the gain structure in different points. So there's a lot of very subtle characteristics to it. And this is powering this Bogner 4x12 that's got four Nola Celestrians with scumbag cones. That, didn't we buy him out?
Yeah, we bought every speaker he had.
You know, we said, oh, those look good. Took them all.
1968 baskets and magnets with scumbag cones in them.
The Ampeg underneath is a possibility. It's, you know, it may come in, it may not. I think it's, we're going to try this out because it's a bit over the top volume-wise.
Now, does Walter, do you find that from week to week or day to day even, there's new amps or pedals or different things showing up?
Oh, yeah. I'm responsible for that. We go out shopping a lot, and we have probably more of that, and we buy everything. None of this stuff is for free. None of these amps, none of those guitars, they're all purchased from the manufacturer, you know, so there's no endorsement things, no nothing. This was bought in Chicago. Right, this was bought in Chicago, this was bought in Cincinnati, Raleigh, New York City.
And after that we have this Marshall 50 watt that's early 70s. And that's powering this Marshall cabinet, which is also a late 60s tall Marshall, that also has the Nola Celestrians with the scumbag cones in it.
It also has the Repro pinstripe grill cloth on it too, because that changes the tone of the speakers. Just like the way Basket Weave does one filter, this rubbery stuff does another.
To use it sounds great, but it is way too loud. You know, if I could get a good ISO box to plug it into, we'd probably use it. But it's, you know, it's got that classic 50 watt Marshall sound. That's the one you want. If you want, that's your amp. Pretty much the Sur and the Marshall will be used together.
Okay.
So, because they're set differently and it's kind of a blended tone. And then when you get tired of that, we'll turn those two off and move to this Bogner. It's Bogner Ecstasy Head, which is a 100 watt amp that's got three different preamps in it, essentially. So you can get like a clean, completely clean, big fat sound, a good crunchy sound, and then a completely over the top. Mm-hmm. Overdriven sound, which is exactly what it does.
Hey, it does.
It really does.
Very German.
And that's going into this Bogner 4x12 that's got vintage 30s in it. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a recent acquisition. We got this just before the beginning of the tour.
And this guy here, he's been really into. This is a Virgil, Three Monkeys Virgil, right? We also have a Three Monkeys Grease Monkey that lives in his hotel room. As well, he's been digging this recently. We also have head switchers to switch heads into cabinets. So if he wants to use the Bogner into this cabinet, we can do that. If he wants to use this into that cabinet, he can do that. If he wants to go this into that cabinet, he can do anything he wants. Some of it, a lot of times, is really random. But we'll spend an hour sound checking, and he changes for each individual room, right? We use SM7s. On his guitar cabinets and a Sennheiser 508 or 608 over there. I'm into this because I mix his guitars live from out front of the house. The other guy's too busy to get. And I hear that, you know, I know what this stuff is, and I know the order that I know what he's going for because I've been here quite some time.
So when it comes to amp switching, is that something he can do from his pedal board, or is that something that's done?
There's a switch usually on top of the amp. We're having problems with the switcher now. That's why it's not up here. We've been using these Palmer head switchers so we can switch two heads into one cabinet. But then last night, one of them went down, and it's a Sunday, so it's like...
I can't get another one.
so it's more or less.
If he wants to switch, it's going to be me running out here.
Yeah.
Manually patching.
Actually, let me explain this. Come over here. This microphone, right? This goes direct to Dave Rule's in-ear monitors, mm-hmm. right? So during a show, he can go, bring me this. I want to use this amp. You suck. Yeah.
So when it talks about guitar change in a song, that's how he'll let you know what guitar.
Yeah, sometimes. Or others, he'll,
you know,
if he's playing something other than that main Sadowski and he wants that guitar back, he'll just do that because it's number two.
Oh, I see.
You know, so that's an easy hand signal. Otherwise, he'll just sort of mouth it and hope I can read his lips.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in a situation like tonight when we're close enough, yeah, I'll get it. When I'm further away, it's kind of hard to see him because it's usually between songs and he's not well lit.
Yeah.
Specifically for the Han Tele and the Fender Custom Shop Nocaster, right? It's a satellite Mud Shark, drives a Mesa Boogie cabinet with two Alnico 12-inch speakers and a nice grill cloth with King Tubby on it. And then sometimes we have this retro channel train wrecky amp to drive that too. There's a lot of options available.
This is the main pick. It's made by a company called V-Pick out of Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
They make the thickest picks I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. This, as you can see, is quite substantial, is one of the thinner ones.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we found the guy, went online, ordered a bag of these, and then just went and looked at some of the other stuff he was making, and we just had to have them. We're on a never-ending quest for picks. Here's another example of a V-pick. This is the V-pick Snake. It's a little bit thicker. Also, this is one of like the medium mm-hmm. for him. And we've got these. A little, this is a some kind of stone, polished stone that's very nice. Everything is very, very rigid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I mean, the thinnest pick he's got out here is probably this, which is a 1 millimeter Dunlap with a sharp point. That's the thinnest pick he'll ever use. And here's a 1.5. These green ones are 1.5. So.
Do you find he gravitates towards certain picks on certain songs, or is it just he kind of rolls by here and picks up whatever?
It's a moment-by-moment thing. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll change picks in the middle of a song sometimes. Mm-hmm. He'll play like rhythm parts on one and then pick up another pick for a solo. So that's why I just sort of lay him out on top of this box and
let him at it.
He can have at it.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is we have every pedal ever made by every manufacturer. And he does, you know, they come in and out mostly for sound check. And it's like that's one pedal board. There's another pedal board up in his dressing room that has completely different effects. And there's a pedal board in his hotel room that's completely different from that.
And I have a box.
We have a big box, big boxes.
A case this high with five drawers in it full of pedals we didn't even bring.
Wow. All right, Dave and Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to walk us through Walter's rig.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jason, it's a pleasure, man.
This is Jason Shadrick with PremierGuitar.com.